Let us be clear, Joe. In the United States of America, we are spending twice as much per capita on health care as the Canadians or any other major country on earth.
This America.
It is Friday, September 13th. Friday the 13th. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. Yes, everybody, this is America. It's America. We get paid through the ass and you get treated like shit. The message from former Vice President Joe Biden. Yes, this is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week I talk to our capital muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, Mr. Chicken himself, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. On today's show, yes, last night, the third Democratic presidential debate. We'll have our hot takes. And it was, looks like people are starting to pay attention now. Only one night of debates, only 10 candidates on the stage. We got some Biden with some indignant word mashing. Bernie needed a cough drop. Warren feeling the momentum of her campaign. Beto calls for mandatory buybacks of assault weapons. Castro seems to go after Biden with the dementia card, for real. And Andrew Yang plays Oprah. You've got a UBI! You've got a UBI! Remember, people, no messiahs this time around. Put our faith in the movements, not any political candidate. I got a little something to say about that. And over in the UK... The UK goes off the rails as Parliament is suspended. Scottish court rules the suspension is unlawful, waiting for some further court rulings, and the clock is ticking down to a no-deal Brexit. Nobody knows what the hell's going on. I talked to my friend Stu over in Northern Ireland like this week, and he's like, nobody knows at all. No, nobody knows it's going to happen. Holy crap. And the Center for American Progress shuts down on a classic union-busting move. Hey, Center for American Progress, you can stick it where the sun don't shine. I don't care if there's good work going on in places. California legislators pass a landmark bill that strikes at the heart of the gig economy. App-based employers like Uber and Lyft must now classify their workers as employees. Imagine that. Not as independent contractors. And speaking of the gig economy, Amazon workers at the company's headquarters in Seattle are planning to walk off the job on September 20th due to climate inaction. Ooh, it's coming home to Bezos. Today's PA Focus, Scott Perry officially unveiled part of his plan to reach out to voters in the Pennsylvania 10th Congressional District this week. That included, of course, talking to voters in a swanky upscale suburb of Nashville, Tennessee. There was some really, I don't know if you saw this, but there was some really crazy gerrymandering that took place that happened to take in parts of Tennessee. So I don't know what's up with that. But that's correct. Congressman Perry doubled and tripled down on his support for Trump in front of Tennessee voters at a local coffee group hosted by a local GOP official. Perry shared the floor with Jim DeMint. Yeah, that's right. Jim DeFrickin' Mint from the Heritage Foundation and, of course, near jail. And Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows' wives. I mean, like, this is like whatever. So it's like every reason why you want to pay attention to what was happening in central Pennsylvania right now, just kind of like move to the front of the stage, folks. It's crazy. And today's last call. Yes, I just finished reading Uninhabitable Earth. I got about halfway through it before and got too depressed, but this time I made it all the way through. And I got to tell you, David Wallace Wells has got me looking forward to any new beer release I can get my hands on. But seriously, it's a must read. I also made a visit to River Horse Brewery this past week. It just so happens, I had to go pick up my daughter's soccer uniform down in New Jersey because of reasons I'll talk about. And then right next door was River Horse Brewery. How cool was that? I'll talk about their great sour triple Belgian that I had. Drank that during the debate. And the U.S. Army joins with Lockheed Martin and Raytheon to test robotic battlefield rocket launchers in Estonia. Yeah, that's going to end well. It's going to end well. Got a couple new Free Will releases this week. We got Crowd Party, which is a hazy IPA coming in at 6.9% ABV. And, yes, wherever it went, we got a barrel-aged Saison de Rose, farmhouse ale aged in barrels with hibiscus, grapefruit, lemons, ginger, and peppercorns, aged for 9 months in wine barrels. That also comes in at 6.9 ABV. Both of those will be available at both locations on Saturday, September 14th. I want to remind everybody to tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org or tune in to the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. Make sure you download Rick's daily podcast on iTunes, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast to. And if we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. You can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. That's one freaking beer a month, folks. $5 a month, so we go to patreon.com/RCPress and choose your membership level. If you're not ready to become a member, just go to ragingchickenpress.org, click the big blue donate button, and give us whatever you can. But the best way you can help support progressive media, keeping the movement in the media and the media in the movement, by going to patreon.com/RCPress and becoming a member for as little as $5 a month. Hey, man, what's happening?
Oh, nothing much.
You recovered from the debate last night?
Yeah, I actually watched the debate for 2 hours. I watched until 10 o'clock and then went to bed. But, man.
It was quite a ride.
It was pretty good.
Some things I didn't quite expect to happen. And some things that were just kind of like, yeah, okay, this is going to happen like this. And
I guess, like, the biggest thing I didn't expect last night was Castro pulling out the old man card.
Holy crap. You sure you remember that, Joe? Hey, Joe, why don't you come down here? Let me kick out your cane. I mean,
it's like, do you remember what you said 5 minutes ago?
Holy shit.
Like, I could not believe he said that. Like, I mean, I feel like there's a lot of things that we go after Joe Biden on. I don't know if I would take that low of a cheap shot, but or that low of a blow. I mean, when like, he said that, you could like hear like the sucking, like a
totally. People were like, "Oh my god, did he just say that? Did he just say what I think he said?" And then he repeated it, right?
And No. I'll tell you what I said. This is what I meant to say.
And what I meant to say is, "Are you fucking a dementia patient?" It's like, you know, it's like, have you got the early onset, Joe? It's like,
I still can't believe he said that.
No, I don't either. Well, that, I think that just signed that just kind of like bought his exit to the from the stage.
Yeah, no, I mean, you had I was just checking Twitter while we were going on, and it's like, I mean, you had Bernie Sanders coming out against it. I mean, yeah, no, that is definitely not a fine moment for this debate. I mean, no matter what you want to say about Biden, using the age card on stage like that is not that good of a move.
Well, and here's the thing. This is advice, right? Political strategy advice for any kind of future candidate or campaign operatives that are out there. If you you have something like this, right? I mean, people, there's been a few things that Biden has said, right, where he's misremembering things or he's telling stories that weren't quite exactly accurate and things like this, which has people in the media and some people kind
like
of
moms demand action last night.
Yeah. Well, there's like the whispering of just kind of like, what is Is he up to the task, right? And, you know, people are trying to be careful. They don't want to kind of just like do the, you know, pull the old man card. But they're also raising the question is like, is he sick or is he, you know, what's going on with that? So if you're a political candidate and the media is already kind of like dancing around that, you don't need to do anything. You don't need to say anything, right? The work is already being done. Now, that is like my most like direct kind of like political consultant advice I would possibly ever give. I mean, like, look, why would you even think of saying something like that? They're already talking about it on TV. And plus, that's fucked up. Right? I mean, you know, like, seriously, I mean,
I almost fell off my couch last night when you said, I mean, like, I was just like, it was almost like, did he just like actually go there? Like, I mean, it's 2019 and all, but
no, I come to thinking like, it's like, yeah, what's he going to say next? Hey, Joe, I'd like to talk to Joe, but he was probably home watching the movie Up this week, thinking about old days. Right. I'm like, you know, it's like, you know, I mean, like, it's, what was this on Golden Pond, Joe? I mean, like, it's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. I couldn't believe that. Like, I mean, yeah, I mean, I felt like another thing we didn't talk about, like, I felt the questioning was actually pretty good from the moderators, not like the CNN debates. I just at this point, I expect all questions to be really poorly framed questions, right, and like right wing narratives, which, like, you know, there was a bunch of that last night. But I feel like Sanders and Biden and others, well, Biden actually didn't respond well to his question. But I mean, like, I feel like the Sanders question was a bit like right wing hackish about his views on socialism in Venezuela and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but
I feel like he
came out and like dispelled that pretty easily.
Well, and he did the right thing. He kind of laughed at the question, right? I mean, he kind of like, really? Okay, we're going to play this game. That was, I think, the appropriate response.
Yes. But I also felt like the questions about Biden getting attacked on, you know, his immigration record with Obama was good.
Yeah.
I also felt like Castro, you know, actually made a good point. Said, you're up here praising Obama, but when you get questioned, when you're asked on the whys, like why something happened, you're totally silent.
I mean, that was
an appropriate attack line.
Yes. Like, and I don't know why he didn't
ride on the coattails of Obama, but whenever you're criticized about anything Obama did that was, you know, questionable, you're silent.
Right. No, exactly. And I just think that, you know, that should have been the line that he took all throughout the debate. Right. The line he took all throughout the debate should have just been like, OK, look, I work for the Obama administration, too, as well. And guess what? I have my own identity. Right.
Yeah.
And when I see there were things that were actually going wrong in that administration, I can say so because I'm a living, breathing human being, not like some sort of appendage of Barack Obama when it's convenient for me. Right. You know, I mean, that was really what it came down to. And, you know, and Biden was, you know, I was interesting. I forgetting the woman's name who was doing the questioning, Lindsay something, I think. I think that she started down a road. I thought, like, oh man, Biden is gonna laugh this off. But she started, you know, about this quote that he gave like 40 years ago, right? Do you remember this part of this? And she's like, I know you said this 40 years ago, but have you changed your mind about this since? And what was interesting about it is that Biden initially thought that she was going to just kind of like say it and say, you said this thing. But instead she said, look, that was 40 years ago. How would you talk about that stuff now? And he was like caught flat footed. He didn't know what to do.
Also, I mean, I thought Senator Klobuchar's legs were about to get swept out from under her when she got questioned on her record while being the attorney general out in Wisconsin.
About the police shootings in Minnesota.
And I actually know someone who did work around that and has actually talked about how horrible her record was when she first announced months ago on this issue. And like it almost felt like she was actually going to cry.
Yeah.
On the stage, like that question, like, yeah, no, I mean, I felt like last night the moderators did a good job at asking good, tough, hard questions that were not being asked that actually couldn't be asked.
Well,
those two back to back debates with like, you know, 30 people on stage.
No, that was better. But the one thing that like the one, you know, the one, this is the stumbling block.
And
right?
Amy Klobuchar, if you listen to her response, did not really address her question at all.
No, definitely. She talked about something else.
Yeah. And she deflected for like 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was interesting. But one of the things, too, as well, is like, you know, it just shows you the degree to which that the kind of the right wing, the kind of the Koch brothers networks and all this kind of stuff have penetrated our political discourse is that the taxes issue. Right. Around kind of Medicare for all stuff. It's the same like Stephanopoulos asking the questions on that it was just like the repeat of what we saw for CNN. Right. I think Warren still, I think, is the best at answering this, except she's got to take it one step further. I was playing this around because she hits this point. Right. She rightly, in my mind, says when he said our middle classes taxes going to go up with Medicare for all. Right. And she correctly, and Bernie Sanders does the same thing, right, correctly says, look, the issue is not taxes, but she did say it like that. It's costs. Right. And the total number of costs. So your total costs are going to go down, whether you call it taxes or whether you call it copays. Right. What matters is the total cost. Right. So I really think that there's got to be a way of kind of changing that discussion a little bit. And there's got to be a better answer so people can reconceptualize what's going on there. Because cost, it's starting to get at it. But it sounds to some people like she's avoiding that question about taxes. And the same thing with Bernie. So I was thinking about, you know, again, here's my my free political consultant advice for the day. It's like, I think we got to start talking about corporate taxation and taxation without representation, right? The difference between being taxed by a private organization that is taking that money to use it for its own purposes versus taxing for public goods that you get for the government, right? And something like Medicare, right? Medicare for all, public college and tuition, those are public goods. And what we've allowed to happen over the past 40 years is for private interests to tax us and to use it for their creating their little fiefdoms, right? With no accountability and no representation, right? So we've handed over, we've ceded democratic check, like on the taxation question, because we've ceded taxation to these mega corporations and allowed them to kind of create their own fiefdoms. That's kind of what I'm thinking about on the messaging level about how you get people's heads around this, because I don't think the media is going to get off the tax thing. So what I think might be a smart move is actually to pivot and say, yeah, we've got two different kinds of taxation here. We've got private corporations taxing us and we've got the government taxing us. So the question is that one form of taxation we actually have some control over, right? Because there's representation. The other form of taxation we have none, right? We're essentially DC, right? We're taxation without representation, and that's what we fought to establish this country over. And yet we, over 40 years, because of the Koch network and the billionaires on the right wing, that we've ceded our representation to private corporations and billionaires. Right? And I think that is a more winning argument, because then you're not deflecting the conversation. You're not deflecting the question, but you're addressing it head on. And but you're still doing the same thing. Warren is trying to do that by talking about costs. But I'm thinking that this taxation frame, the corporate entities taxing us, may be a better frame. That's just my my 2 cents for the day.
Yeah, I agree with that. And then I was also going to say, I'm glad the debate started. I'm glad like Joe Biden threw down the gauntlet right off the bat on healthcare, because I mean, right at the top of the debate, when the most people are going to be paying attention and people aren't going to be trailing off. And no, I mean, I felt like the messaging from Sanders and Warren on universal healthcare was on point.
Yep.
And when like when Biden went, I almost I forgot about that until like you played that drop. This is America.
Yeah, it's, I couldn't believe it. I was like, did he just say that? I mean, this is like in the first freaking whatever 10 minutes of the damn debate, he fucking said that. We're spending more money than all these other. This is America. That's how things work here.
Oh, come on. Give me a break.
But when he said that, I was just like, oh, my God. Like, that is. Yeah, no. I mean, I felt like Biden was off his game. I was actually surprised that. Well, I'm not so surprised. I mean, it seemed like the moderators did their best to keep Warren and Biden and Sanders from just going at each other's necks the whole entire time, which, I mean, I guess that's a good thing.
Well, look, I think it was set up. Look, I think Stephanopoulos, that first question was set up, right, to do exactly that, to get him to go after each other. What I think happened there is that if you looked at Warren, right, Warren throughout that entire debate, she rarely looked over to Biden, right? And I think what Biden's camp wanted is kind of like a repeat of the Kamala Harris thing, right? He wanted to kind of like go like back and forth with her and make her look at him, like, but she never did. Right. What she kept on doing is she kept on looking at the moderator or looking at the audience. Right. And that's
straight into the camera.
Right. So essentially you make him more irrelevant in that kind of discussion. Right. Because, OK, like whatever, without having to go back and forth, because I think Biden wanted that. Right. I think his camp was like, look, you got to be afraid of Warren because Warren is eventually going to take you down. And I think that his attempt was to go on the offense, but she just kind of didn't take the bait. She stayed on policy and stayed on the issue. Right. And then, you know, there was only that one moment when after he said the America comment where the, you know, the moderators really had to step in because the crowd was going crazy and the moderators stepped in. They had to say like, right. They were not exactly 100% thrilled with Biden's answer on that one. But, you know. Oh boy. So the one thing you got to say about, well, one, no, this is actually good. Freaking Beto calling for mandatory buybacks of assault weapons.
Yes.
Right? I mean, this is the kind of thing, right, that Democrats are afraid of getting shot in the streets for. And matter of fact, there was a Republican lawmaker back in Texas who basically said, yeah, I got my AR-15 waiting for you here, Beto.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean,
so,
like, but I was also thinking about this, like, that is the type of messaging that the Democrats have ceded ground on for decades.
Exactly.
Like, it's, I was thinking about this earlier today. Reading something earlier this week, like out in Michigan, what's happening with the pro-life Democrats, like this Michigan for Life endorsed like 30 Democrats back in 2000.
Yeah.
And a good, like a number of them, they only endorsed two this last time around and both lost.
Yeah.
In the primaries. And it's, no, I mean, like, it's, yeah, we've ceded ground on this messaging for decades.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Especially on women's health, on gun issues. Like, yeah, no, we've ceded ground because, like, oh, well, we actually don't want to. Their messaging is so bad. We're just going to not come up with anything and counter because, like, we're going to lose.
Right.
We're afraid of losing.
Right. And, like,
we're, you know, we're afraid of fighting, putting up a fight and actually, you know, staking out an issue on this stuff.
Right. And I think that this is, you know, one. I don't know what Beto's
like
angling.
Like, yeah, you're damn right. We're coming for your assault.
Yeah,
weapons.
Exactly.
Like with mandatory buyback.
Right. And because, like, you know, he was asked the question directly. Right. And I think all the expectations were is like, well, we're not going to come from people's gun like that. No. And he didn't flinch. Right. He had like this moment pause and he's like, that's damn right. We're coming for those assault weapons. Anything that is designed to be on the battlefields of, you know, like on the battlefields as a weapon of war should not be kind of like in the hands of people. And like that, you know, again, I don't know if that's Beto kind of getting to that particular point where he realizes, okay, look, I'm not going to get this nomination. So what do I have to lose? I'm going to stake out a different ground. Is that a play that he's making for kind of the vice presidency? I don't know. But, you know, he did do an amazing job after that mass shooting down in his hometown, right, where of kind of addressing the issue of gun violence. And, you know, look, I'll give him the credit, right? I'll give him the credit. Say, let's say it was all kind of like legitimate and he actually was heartfelt and he actually means what he says. That's freaking awesome. Because what it does is that, you know, again, it's like moving the Overton window, right? It's actually you're breaking that glass pane and basically establishing a different end of the frame. And yes, there's going to be backlash of that and everything like this. But now suddenly that's on the table. And people start talking about that, and that's a way of getting some of that ground back that the left has ceded to the right, or the Democrats have at least ceded to the right for several decades now.
Yeah. So.
So you know, so I think that's a good move. And so the other thing is, you know, you got to give a whole lot of credit to Oprah. I mean Andrew Yang for bringing game show life into the presidential debates.
So in Philadelphia, we actually have a thing for this, a term for this.
What is this?
Street money.
Street money. Yeah, no, exactly. A little walking around money. I'm going to give you a little walking around money.
Yeah, we got. Hey, you know what? Like, I. This is going to be. This is actually going to sound really bad.
Okay.
I actually don't mind whams or pork, like, in government. I actually support having whams and stuff like that.
Wait, whams? What the hell's a wham?
Walking around money.
Oh, wait. Oh, okay. Yeah. You call that a wham. I didn't know there was an actual like acronym for that.
Yes,
our attention wham. Span has gotten so small that we can't fucking say walking around money. We have to say wham.
In Harrisburg, they used to be known as whams. Mm. But no.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, look, like I thought that was just weird, to be honest with you. I'm going to give you $1,000. I'm going to give you $1,000. 10
everyone's
people,
just like,
$1,000 a month.
The debate stage is like, okay.
Yeah. Klobuchar actually had a good remark. She's like, well, she's like,
There's something different.
Yeah, exactly. There's something different, which I think was pretty much the appropriate response. But,
I mean,
I know you're not a Yang fan. Right?
I fucking hate Yang. I think he's like Marianne Williamson. I think he should probably just go, leave, goodbye.
Yeah.
The Democratic field would be a lot better without him. No, and it's mainly because like of his libertarian attitude with UBI and with minimum wage and stuff like that. I mean, like a couple weeks ago, he was saying there's no need to have a minimum wage. And if you listen to how he was framing it yesterday with his UBI discussion, like he wants UBI to he's like, pretty much, that I want you to do whatever you want with that money.
Right.
When like the whole entire basis of this UBI is to destroy the social safety net. Like, it's to destroy food stamps, it's to destroy SNAP, it's to destroy like Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, all that stuff.
Well, look, like Sean and I had this like 20-minute conversation about Yang before we went on the air today. So let me just lay out my position on this, right? Is that everything that Sean just said about Yang's actual proposal and the UBI, I agree with. So let's just get that. Let me stipulate that right off the bat. This is where I like Sean and I part ways. I think it's really good to have Yang in the debates, right? And as this kind of basically single issue candidate, right, on UBI, right? Now his version of UBI, I'm not a proponent of, but I am a proponent of UBI, right, as a base, kind of like a baseline kind of payment, right?
But that means but it should be wealth redistribution.
That's totally 100%. Right.
Like this money should be being taxed from the Koch brothers, taxed from the billionaires
exactly.
in this country. And that wealth should be redistributed downwards.
Exactly. And we strengthen the social safety net. Yeah. Right. So the UBI is in my view, right? Your UBI is not the thing that you do kind of like instead of the social safety net. This is the thing that you do in addition. Right. So if you want to actually lay a floor, right, and basically say nobody is going below this floor, right, the UBI, in my mind, is kind of one of the most persuasive ways to do this. Right. Because what it also does, right, because
Republicans, we already have a form like this with the EITC,
right,
earned income tax credits. I mean, this is the general theory of the earned income tax credits, is like a Republican alternative to, you know, actually have make sure everyone has a standard income.
Right.
You know, a socialist idea.
Well, no, that's just the thing, right? That's what I see it as the core. You're talking about there's like this is as part of being part of this, like this nation, this space, right? Whatever we're going to, however this kind of plays itself out, right? This commonwealth, whatever you're talking about, by being nature of that, right? You are going to be kind of a share in that. Right. And we're not going to allow people to go below a certain level. The other thing is, too, is that what it does is it makes it possible because, look, there's the fear of the robots. Right. Which Andrew Yang keeps on kind of putting up the robots are going to take over everything. And look, to a certain degree, that's accurate. Right. There is because of the ways that development is currently happening. Right. Now, again, we could change our policies to make this different. Right. But because the way it's currently happening is that automation is going to further automate, you know, we're going to further automate kind of low wage jobs and people are going to be put out of work. Right. The solution should never be. And this is where I think, you know, part we run into problems in American discourse, because the solution should never be that we should just work harder. Right. We need to start shifting the idea. We're talking about work and talk about the quality of work and to say, like, we should bring down the workday, not increase the workday.
And then, yeah, this is where we should be talking about, you know, we should be able to enjoy their quality of free time. And, you know, we should be capitalizing, you know, like over in Europe. And all, like, you know,
look, when you're talking about in Europe, when you have like a mandatory like 5 week paid vacation, right? You have to take 5 weeks. You know, it's like minimum, right?
And I enjoy my free time.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You're like the living UBI kind of example. I mean, and look, it's made your life substantially better, right? I mean, come on. Yeah. You get some money for existing, and that's a good thing. I'm just kidding, but
yeah, I sit on a deck, you know.
Sit on a deck and you do what you want, right? But what it, because the UBI in my mind does a few things. One, you're able to remove some, like you're having a program that's a universal program that is not stigmatized, right, on grounds of race, on the grounds of class position, around the whether or not you're an upstanding citizen, whether or not you're kind of like, you know, no, you just, this is your baseline, this is your universal, right? And that is because I look, as someone who grew up on food stamps, right, as someone who's kind of like, you know, had to deal with government programs when, you know, I mean, I didn't deal with, my mom did, right? But I mean, had to be part of that and going to wait in line. And as a kid, feeling the freaking shame, right, of having to kind of document all this stuff. And my mom, I could see her. She was ashamed, right, because the person is taking down all this information and checking in. And you could see there's this degree of distrust on their faces that is she actually telling the truth? And meanwhile, my handicapped sister is sitting there barely able to kind of like, you know, keep her head up. And me sitting there feeling freaking full of shame for what? Right? I mean, the thing is like, so just for want to put food on the table? Fuck that. Right, and the whole idea is that with the UBI, when you make it universal, you remove that, right? And then plus, because remember, when unions were able to get the victory of the 8-hour day, right, and the weekend, right, that never was the end point. Like the 8-hour day and the 40-hour work week and only 2-day weekends, right? That is not like, you know, the perfect scenario in the utopia. Right. Unions advanced us to that position. Working class movements advanced us to that position. And why the hell we stop there, I don't know. Right. If we have more efficiencies that are brought into the economy, that we should damn well then have to have a reduction in our amount of work.
Because guess what? We also heard the trope yesterday, speaking about unions, that, you know, why should we change health care plans that unions fought hard for? Like, yeah, unions fought hard and had to sacrifice other advancements in the workplace because they didn't want their healthcare to get gutted. Like, if workers didn't have to have, you know, their healthcare as a bargaining chip every time there's a contract negotiation, then you actually might get better substantial workplace advancements because it gives the worker more of an opportunity to bargain better position advancements in, like, wage increases, or like makes their quality jobs better.
Absolutely. And look, Frank, that argument about like, well, the unions, they fought hard for that stuff, right? But the argument, say, for not doing Medicare for all.
Time fighting hard for that stuff. So they didn't.
Totally. Totally. Right. And it divides the working class. Right. It's playing on a particular thing about saying like, no. There's certain people that they've won it. And they're going to deserve it. They're going to keep this stuff. But guess what? If you're a union member like I am. Right. What's happened to your insurance over the past 20 years? You've watched it being eaten away and destroyed. Right. Suddenly that you're not only if you want a discount, quote unquote, on your health care, you have to hand over all this freaking data to the health care company. Right. Or you pay 30% more on your premiums. Right. Yeah. So we exchange what? And that's supposed to be a victory that we give hand over data to our health care company so they can better figure out how to deny us coverage. Are you kidding me? That is not a solution. And you talk to other people in my union and other union members, is they don't look at their healthcare companies and like, I love these people. Just like Warren said, just like Sanders said, I never met somebody like who loves their health insurance company.
Yeah, I mean, I don't love UPMC, my provider.
No, exactly. Who could?
I mean, my premiums just went from $75 to $230 a month.
Yeah, and guess what happens? If under Medicare for All, what happens then, Sean?
I don't have that.
Oh, yeah! Imagine that. And I look at it like this: if I'm working a job right now, like yes, unions have made substantial advances in terms of for their members, right, for healthcare, and in many cases for the broader working class as a whole, right? Because by extension of you know, people say, look, you know, if you want to work for me, yeah, we don't like unions, but I'll give you a good package. And that's been the result of unions. But the whole idea is like, look, if I have health insurance, right, and my boss and my workplace is crappy, right, you know, healthcare is not a reason I stay at that job anymore, right? Healthcare is like that, and that scares the crap out of the capitalists. Right, out of the boss man. Well, because they know they don't have that to hold over your head. And guess what happens at negotiations now? You sit at the negotiations table and you say, well, we're gonna have to increase your healthcare costs now. We have Medicare for All. It's like, no, that's all right, we're just gonna drop that plan. We don't need it anymore.
and unions are important because if you have a boss like Neera Tanden, who decides decides to break their union at Center for American Progress, at least the unionized workers at Think Progress were able to get 12 weeks severance pay and health care coverage through the rest of the year because of their strong because of their union at Think Progress. But
exactly.
Center for American Progress, done. Goodbye. Never. never paying attention to what they do again.
Well, what was crazy about that, right? They sit there and they say they're gonna go out of business or whatever the hell. They're gonna shut it down. So they basically effectively break the
union. Turn Think Progress into a scab outfit,
right? Because they did, and they say right almost like in the next breath. And then we're going to wait a few. Basically, we're going to wait a few days, and we're going to relaunch Center for American Progress, right?
Think Progress.
They would say we're going to a version of that.
Yeah.
Right. They're going to Think Progress. They're going to relaunch that like in a couple days. And like, really? So you've, Jason, you just basically give up the goods. Like you're not even a good freaking like, you know, union like buster. Union buster, right? You, like rule number one of like in union busting, right? He's like, you don't tell the, you know, the union.
Don't
like
tell
that.
The rubber breaking union.
Right. You know what? Because that's against the law. So they're done. And so it's good. They're not going to need that money that they had to pay out the workers for the severance package, because there's like, you know, anyone who's worth their salt and on the kind of like
and hopefully all these unions that have given to Center for American Progress cease donations to this institute immediately.
Yeah.
And demand their money back, like their checks back if they've given it already. And we want our money back. Like we're
absolutely
pulling out. And like, I hope this. Yeah. No, like there are other good think tanks that are doing really good work in D.C. That don't have the name or the glitz or the glamour that Center for American Progress does, because Center for American Progress was one of the first think tanks probably in D.C. on the left side doing what they are doing. But like, no, I mean, like, sorry, but Think Progress was never meant to make profits. You're a fucking you're all. You are there to spend other people's money and make sure you spend all of it by the end of the year.
Yeah, but you know what? When you start cutting checks and cashing checks from the United Arab Emirates, for example, and taking some big money, you maybe start thinking a little bit different about your project, right? You start thinking like, hey, I could use with my own kind of little island in the Mediterranean.
Comcast and Facebook,
right,
and Google.
Exactly.
I mean, like, you look at who Center for American Progress's donors are. I mean, it's also some of the people that we're fighting. The left is fighting. The progressives are fighting to actually make sure there's better workplaces. No,
right.
I mean, yeah.
And we should say that. Look, those critiques about where their funding comes from and their ideological bent, those are not new, right? And those are kind of like legitimate complaints about that. And because I want to say it like this, I've heard this now a number of times. Right, I've heard this, you know, both in social media. I've heard this in the talking heads, like on TV, and I've heard this some from more kind of like liberal ends of areas of things. When they want to kind of like say they want to excuse somehow Center for American Progress actions by saying like, oh, look, there's some good work that gets done there. You know what? And that is the most nonsensical piece of like a fragment of a sentence that I could possibly ever imagine for that, because it means nothing. Guess what? There's good work that is done everywhere. Right? The question are these people?
And it also shows you again the content or the discontent that the Clinton people have for unions in this country. You know, Rahm Emanuel,
the contempt. Yeah.
Neera Tanden, all of these people, Podesta, like all these people involved with Center for American Progress is pretty much like the island of misfit like staffers for Clinton. The HRC administration that never happened. And it shows you what their views are. Well, it doesn't show you. It reinforces.
Reinforces, yeah, it's a good word.
What their views are on unions. I mean, because they've been like this for the past 15 or 20 years.
Well, yeah, and look, they published that hit job on Sanders earlier this summer, which they, even in their own, article, it says like, yeah, well, what he says is true.
And right. Like, it's... Like, they did this at a time when support for labor is at a 64-year high,
mm-hmm.
and where labor is being pushed to the forefront of all the debates, support of unionism and stuff like that. No, sorry, you're done. Like,
yep, I agree.
And, like, it shows you the irrelevancy that the Clinton people should have from this point forward. I mean, like... You just like crossed the line. And what's going to be sad is if Biden gets through this whole entire charade, like she's Neera Tanden will probably be front in the line to be an administrative position within a Biden cabinet.
Yeah.
Which again just shows you the lip service these organizations or these people pay for unions and then their actions don't meet the lip service.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, crazy, 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 crazy stuff. So, yeah, just as I mentioned up the top, do check out what California is doing there with the gig economy. And this is one of the big things. Like, unions have been fighting this for a long time, working class organizations fighting for a long time about the misclassification of workers, which allows these kind of like Silicon Valley companies, you know, like Uber and everything like this, to classify, misclassify employees as independent contractors, therefore pushing off all the costs onto the individual workers. FedEx is one of the ones that helped kind of establish this pattern kind of way back in the day. But that new California law is going to prevent that, which is freaking awesome. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens here in terms of court challenges and that stuff to that that case. So keep an eye on that. And then it's also kind of just cool to see about 900 Amazon workers basically saying, look, we've had enough about climate inaction. So we're going to take to the streets and we're going to kind of walk out on September 20th. So remember, September 23rd is when we're going to get the UN Climate Action Summit in New York. We're going to see a bunch of ramping up of protests around the third week of September around climate. So it's, you know, as many people join as possible. So cool. So Sean, you want to take a break now or you want to wait? You want to go into PA and go there? What do you think?
I think we can go into PA right now.
All right, let's go to PA now. We'll take a break for last call. All right, so yeah. We move in here for in closer to Pennsylvania today. Sean has kind of sent me this kind of early on in the week about your good old, so you know, your good old representative out there in Harrisburg.
Yeah, so my congressman, soon to be former congressman, Scott Perry. Let's all hope for the best.
Yeah, he's running against that auditor guy, right?
Yeah. Some Star Wars fan. Yeah. Goofy.
Win you must.
But so pretty much like over the week, this past week, Scott Perry went down, was, you know, a really like local news story popped up that was kind of weird and odd. And it came from Brentwood, Tennessee, which is a swanky upscale suburb of Nashville, out in central Tennessee.
Well, I mean, it's technically like a suburb of Harrisburg too, right? I mean,
yeah, I'm pretty sure that like if you draw a line that is like the diameter of or the width of I-81,
uh-huh,
and drew that all the way down into like Tennessee,
mm-hmm,
and then went over a little bit, and then, you know, had like a big like loop, mm-hmm, you could probably draw that into this district.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. It might be like it's 750 miles long, but you can do it.
Anything's possible in the world of magic.
Yes. Well, I mean, the map maker is dead. Hoffel, mm-hmm, Hoffel or whatever his name, mm-hmm, is. So, but
ding dong.
But Perry was down in Tennessee this past week, speaking at a coffee group thing with this woman who is a local county commissioner. Her name is Sandy Wells. She's not a constituent of the PA-10. But like Perry was down in Tennessee speaking about, I don't know what, yeah. A lot of gibberish, I guess, but he pretty much was down there doubling down and tripling down on his support for Trump in front of these people. There were 60 people there, which is about 30 more than the people who showed up to his town hall a few weeks ago out here in Pennsylvania. So it's a shame he has to travel 800 miles to get a crowd, but
I think he was down there talking about how God was going to rain down hellfire on the burgeoning red socialist wave. I think that's what it was about.
Yeah, pretty much.
and women should be like locked behind doors. I think that was pretty, yes, much what it was all, yes, about.
I mean, like, I'm still trying to like digest this article. Mm-hmm. Definitely recommend reading it. He was down there with Jim DeMint from the Heritage Foundation. DeMint's not with the Heritage Foundation anymore, but he's launching his own conservative institute. And they're supporting Perry, and it looks like this is probably – he's probably down there for campaign cash. So far this year, he's raised $20,000 from three individual donors within the Nashville area, pretty much all max donations that's underwritten through the House Freedom Fund. And he was down there with Mark Meadows' wife and Jim Jordan's wife. They are going to be doing the Women for Trump. And, yeah, no, this is just a pretty odd story.
Yeah, I mean,
he had to be down there for fundraising purposes.
It's got bags of money written all over it. I mean, seriously. I mean,
yeah. And this also shows you that, like, he is not. He only represents a small segment of this district.
Yep.
And I really feel like that's what he's made it out to be. He's pretty much signaled that he's only representing one core group of people, the people that agree with him, and anyone else he's not going to care about within this district. And that's probably going to be the reason why he's going to lose.
Well, and he's a perfect example of somebody that was, you know, perfect for that kind of red map plan. Right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, the only reason why he was a congressman was because of, like, the extreme gerrymandering in the state.
Exactly.
I mean, like, my district, I was a Scott Perry. So, like, I was actually in Perry's district with the old maps. Mm-hmm. And it was literally like the Midtown neighborhood. And that's it in Harrisburg. The rest of the city was divided up with Lou Barletta. I mean, like, this whole entire area, the gerrymandering in this part of the state is egregious.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, like, it's. Now we have an actual fair map, a fair district with this race. And yeah, I mean, like, he's signaling that he is going to be running on Trump in a district that went from an R20 something to an R2.
Yep.
And he thinks that's going to be able to carry him over the finish line.
Not a chance. Not a chance. Well, there's always a chance. I don't want to kind of like count my chickens or anything like that, but I think he's in for it now because that the whole model was that, right? Is that you basically make sure that that person is going to be protected
in the 20 or 30 points.
Right. It's
going
to be virtually impossible for them to lose. And then what you do is you change who your constituents are. Your constituents shift from the people actually living in that district, right, to these kind of right wing funding groups. Right. So then the funds come in. Right. And they get funneled into that district and you're protected in that district. So you no longer need to speak for your constituents. You're speaking for the agendas of these right wing groups. And now that's been kind of exposed. But yet, you know, you're still seeing the, you know, the money train, which apparently leads to Tennessee.
Yeah. And like I was actually looking at his like so like out-of-state donations. Like I only picked like the 10 or 12 southern states like to look at. I mean, like he was raising nothing down south in 12. 14 and 16. It's only between since 18 when the districts got changed, between 2018 and 2000 and this cycle where he's actually just raising, he's getting boatloads of donations from down south, either getting underwritten through the House Freedom Fund, through the Freedom Caucus, that's being directed to him. But no, he's been raising a lot of money through his camp, through his FEC reports, down south.
Yep.
Which, I mean, that's where the Freedom Caucus is pretty much located. So,
there you go. That's it right
there. I mean, he's going down to the rich plantations of the South.
Exactly. Exactly. Right? He's going to, yeah, well, I'm going to, God, my, the newsroom phone has been running off the hook this morning. So, sorry about that. We've got apparently some breaking news over there in the corner of us here at Raging Chicken Studios. So I have to shut off that ringer. Sorry. So what you're hearing, everybody out there. No, it's not in your ear. It's in my freaking basement.
But I mean, it also shows you that, that like he has to go down south or he has to go 700 miles outside the district to speak to people who are never going to vote for him. But who are going to give him money.
Right.
While he cannot speak to constituents in his own district.
Right. Because he's got to go down there and say, look, I'm someone who will carry your ideological water for you in D.C. Please help me get there. Because, you know, I'm sure that he was you know, talking about how, you know, there's danger of losing the seat and everything like that. So,
yeah.
So crazy. So crazy, crazy. Anything else going on in PA, man?
The legislature is back in session tomorrow, or not tomorrow, this weekend. Not this weekend. I'm sorry. All sorts of messed up.
In 22. I mean, next week. In October, I mean. I mean, no.
Sorry. I have like mice in my apartment. I think they came in during the heat wave. And like, I could like hear them like running around. So I'm like getting distracted right now. So
here you go, folks. You got the phone ringing off the hook of my head. You got mice running through Sean's apartment up his spant legs.
So like, but I mean, like, this is just, you know, welcome to Harrisburg. I live a block off the riverfront.
Yeah.
in a city. So, but no, they're coming. Legislature is coming back in session next week. The 17th, there's going to be actions regarding minimum wage all day. There's going to be in-district meetings on Monday with the minimum wage. And people actually think that the, there might be a push to raise minimum wage with this upcoming session. So we'll see.
Nice, nice. I wanted to look up one more thing just to kind of see where we are with this, if I can find it. Okay, well, we'll do it next week. Yeah, just look at some other stuff that was going on, that, but it's not happening yet. All right, or it's not where I need to do. No, cool. All right, anything else for the good of the order?
No, that's pretty much it.
All right, cool. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back in for today's last call. This is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. Today's last call, where we talk space news, we talk beer, we talk whatever else is on our mind for the day. Don't have a whole bunch of space news here, but got kind of like an adjacent set of news. This was just a disturbing story that came up in my one of my feeds, is that the U.S. Army is basically palling up with Lockheed Martin and Raytheon. Again, these are longtime friends. And they're testing robotic battlefield rocket launchers out on the battlefield in Estonia. And it was, you know, again, in the world of, you know, my childhood love of dystopian science fiction basically coming real in front of my eyes. This is a perfect example of this. I just want to read you a little bit of this article so you get a sense of what I'm talking about. So Raytheon and Lockheed Martin, this is from Defense News, right? Raytheon and yes, and Defense News comes up in my feeds. Yes. Raytheon and Lockheed Martin team fired a Javelin missile using a Kongsberg remote launcher on an unmanned ground vehicle. That's a mouthful. Amid an effort by the U.S. Army to determine when and how it will use armed ground robots on the battlefield. Okay. You can hear Andrew Yang, right, yelling in the background right here, right? But the Titan UGV was built by, Kintik North America and Estonian company Milam Robotics. The mid-June demonstration at the Redstone Arsenal Test Center in Alabama validated the capability, and Raytheon's Brad Fribbs told Defense News in an interview with DSEI Defense at a DSEI defense contract. So basically, they're looking for ways that they can, you know, bring robots onto the battlefield, you know, and this is one of these things that for a long time, it seemed like this was pure kind of fiction and scare tactics and crazy stuff, but they're actually testing this stuff. And if you click on the link in the show notes today, you'll actually see a picture of this kind of battlefield robotic rocket launcher that they're playing around with. So if you think about, we've already started replacing or kind of adding to like robotics in the sky with drones, right? And now we're basically putting them on the ground, right? The question is, it's unclear from the article, at least, if these are going to be fully kind of automated, right? Or if they are still going to be, you know, having to be driven kind of like drones, that they're going to be, you know, like video game stuff. So anyways, it's something to check out. But that was just – that was pretty crazy. I just love the title of this one. It says, Estonian robot fires javelin missile using Norwegian remote launcher. All right, so there you go. Like, kumbaya, the nation state. Gotta love it. So, I mentioned on the top, I got to go down to the River Horse Brewery. It happened to be right next to where my daughter's where you get the soccer uniforms for my daughter. And it just so happens that, you know, I'd ordered these uniforms weeks ago. They still hadn't arrived. My daughter's first game, if you listen to podcasts last week, my daughter's first game was last Saturday. Still didn't have her uniform, so I'm like, I call the company. I'm like, look, can I just come down and get it? It's like, oh, yeah, sure. It got held up because, you know, they didn't have the shorts in stock. So everything else was ready, so I just drove down. It took me 5.5 hours. It was an awful drive, whatever. But so I get down there, and I pull out, pick up the soccer uniform, and I pull out of the place and kind of make a turn. And the next building over, like it's in this kind of like office parky kind of thing, next building over was River Horse Brewing Company. I'm like, what? Get out of here. That was actually when I first moved to Allentown. That was the first kind of like local regional beer that I had had, right? This is, you know, back in 2002. So it was kind of like this, you know, this nice little moment. And so I picked up some stuff that they had down there, some good stuff. And last night during the debate, I had their sour triple Belgian, which was just fantastic. So people were real nice, and they were asking about stuff up here in Pennsylvania. I told them about Pizza Boy. I told them about, you know, Free Will. It was just kind of a nice little spot.
You said that's in Jersey, right?
That's in New Jersey, yeah. Ewing, E-W-I-N-G, Ewing, New Jersey.
Yep.
Yeah, it used to be in, what do you call it? I'm spaced in the name of it. It used to be in another town, and apparently it got bought out, right? It got bought out in 2007, I believe, by a couple guys that kind of like were working on Wall Street and then kind of got fed up with the whole thing, and they quit their jobs, and they kind of came back and they bought up this brewery, and I guess they expanded the production of it and kind of moved it over. It used to be in Lambertville, I think, is where it was originally was. But it's good. The beer was good, and nice little space, kind of like, you know, you wouldn't expect it to be there. So it was kind of fun. So that was a nice little surprise of the week. We've got a couple new Free Will releases. I'll run them through for you. I should say this up top, too, as well, that the remember, we talked about this last week, but today, later today from 5 to 7, it's the official deck party at Free Will Brewing. They basically build out their this new deck. Right. And and the new deck, that's up in the Peddler's Village one. So that's kind of the official like unveiling and launch of this. They're going to have a bunch of specials and live music. And the Scarecrow Fest up at Peddler's Village is just like right around the corner. So some of the scarecrows apparently are already set up and stuff. So it's going to be a really great environment. The weather is awesome for it. Right. Right now it's a clear, like, you know, fall kind of like little gloomy kind of day. It's perfect for it. That deck party will be at both locations, but the main one will be out of Peddler's Village today. And you got two new beer releases this week. The first one is Crowd Party. Crowd Party is, I'll just read it for you here. It's a hazy IPA brewed with flaked oats, vanilla, and milk sugar. And it's hopped with cashmere, Vic's Secret, laurel, and Yukonot. Did I get that right? Yukonot? Something like that. Any notes of peach cobbler, blueberry freckle ice cream, strawberry cheesecake, and mango Dole Whip at 7% ABV or 6.9%. So those four packs will be available tomorrow on Saturday, but there'll be sneak previews available at the deck parties tonight. In addition to that, they've got one of their great sours from the sour cellars that's up and ready. It's a barrel-aged Saison de Rose. And I've had this. I haven't had this one, obviously, this year, but I've had it in the past, and it's great. It's a much kind of, if you talk about, say, a lighter sour, it's just a lighter tasting sour. Does come in at 6.9 ABV. This is their description. It's aged in barrels with hibiscus, grapefruit, lemons, ginger, and peppercorns. It's aged for 9 months in wine barrels. It's bottle conditioned for 1 year, and the beer strikes a balance between delicate fruit, flowers, and lively determined spiciness. Right, and I don't remember if I had the barrel aged version before or if it was just a Saison de Rose. So I'm looking forward to this one too as well. So that's what I got. Anything else, Sean, you got? Cool stuff going on?
I am going to be going down to James's 30th birthday today. James Trzonski's having a party tonight.
Go, James! Go, James! Happy birthday! Happy birthday!
And then Pizza Boy released a Permasmile last week.
Yeah, you sent me the you sent me that link. Please do tell.
It's a really nice sour peach and apricots. It's a blended sour, so it's a sour of 1 year, 2 year, and 3 year barrels that are then blended together, and then lambic style. And then towards the end of it, they put peaches and apricots in it, and it's a really nice, funky Brett sour.
Nice.
Yep. Yep.
It looks fantastic. Sean sent me a picture of it with with that. I was just like, and it said Permasmile, and it gave me a smile, and it looks like an awesome drinking beer.
Yeah, no, it's a nice beer. I'm definitely looking forward to it. Well, I'm looking forward to aging and see how it turns out. Because my Permasmiles from 3 years ago are all gone.
Yeah.
I had like five or six of them.
Well, you know, it's funny. You reminded me because when you...
And they're only $20 a bottle. Last time they were like 30 or 35.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you reminded me when you said that to me because I realize I still have a couple bottles from Pizza Boy. From like 4 years ago now, probably four, maybe even 5 years ago now. And I think I've got maybe one or two of those left, and I've got another one for Woodland Brewery up in Deerfield, New York, or, you know, Utica, New York. I've got one of theirs too as well. So I might be having a little fall celebration this weekend. So
nice.
Cool, cool, cool. Well, man, anything else going on other than the big party weekend?
No, that's pretty much it.
Very cool.
I'll be back up here for the Eagles game on Sunday.
The Eagles. Oh yeah, football season started. I forgot.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Cool. Well, everybody, thank you for sticking with us out today. Hope you are recovering from the debates and kind of looking forward to the next step. Yes, as Sean said, legislature is back in session next week, so we're going to start to see more movement here right in Pennsylvania. You got Ed Rendell kind of raised his freaking, like, whatever, Jabba the Hutt head, right, as usual, and kind of like to bring evil once again into the Democratic Party. Sorry, that's my own personal position on this. But, you know, there's always that. So that tells you that, yes, it's officially off. So there we have it. All right, everybody, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. I want to remind you, you become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress today. We will talk to you next week to see what round of insanity comes our way. See ya!
Let us be clear, Joe. In the United States of America, we are spending twice as much per capita on health care as the Canadians or any other major country on earth.
This America.